And while you think you might be getting richer in dollar terms because of your equity portfolio, your stock portfolio, you're really not.
Everything that the government involves itself in, from healthcare to education, it all gets worse. And the same is true with retirement savings.
Bitcoin is going to run out at every given price forever. You know, there's only going to be so many people willing to sell it for $125,000.
And if you're a holder in self-custody, you will be rewarded. And I think all of the work that you've done to orange pill people and help them see what Bitcoin's all about, they're going to get it pretty soon. You know, nothing attracts new buyers like greed, number go up. And I think as Bitcoin continues to pump in price, you're going to get those text messages and people are going to need help.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Bitcoin Banter. I have Greer with me. And Adam, thank you for joining last minute. Tony had some internet problems, big storms where he is at the moment. So let's jump into the news up first. So we talked about, I think on the last banter, this debasement trade, basically people buying gold and Bitcoin. And Luke Groman has a very interesting tweet. He says, you know, basically, the long story short here is in U.S. dollar terms, everything is up from the NASDAQ, the S&P, home prices. But in gold, things are down. The NASDAQ is up, but the S&P and home prices are down. And in Bitcoin terms, the NASDAQ is down 78% since COVID, the S&P 84%, and home prices are down 87% since COVID. So Bitcoin is absolutely crushing it. To me, there is one strong signal here. The debasement trade is a real thing, and people are freaked out about what is going on in the world. But Adam, I'm going to turn this one to you first. I would love to hear what your takeaway from this is.
Well, I would just say, you know, the debasement trade isn't necessarily anything new. And credit where it's due, you know, I think the gold bugs have really been harping at this for, you know, many decades. And they've turned out to, of course, be right, as you can see in the gold price and just from the inevitable collapse of the fiat U.S. dollar. But, you know, Bitcoiners have been parroting this for many years as well, too. And, you know, tropes like, you know, Bitcoin has no top because fiat has no bottom. Nothing stops this train. You know, a lot of different sayings that kind of echo the same sentiment that, you know, the dollar is going to be able, it's just going to be printed into oblivion. And Bitcoin is the debasement trade in our eyes because it is the ultimate store of value and it is ultimately scarce. So there is an absolute finite supply. And there's never going to be more than 21 million. So the ultimate debasement trade is Bitcoin. You know, gold right now is having a really good run. And I think, again, credit where it's due. It's about time for them to have a small celebration. But ultimately speaking, gold is always going to be second best to Bitcoin.
Amen. Greer, what do you think?
Kudos on the marketing. The debasement trade is a fantastic term. I think normies get it. It reminds me of when estate taxes were renamed death taxes. That helped people wrap their head around what was going on. You know, and as Adam said, the gold bugs knew this a long time ago. They're just wrong about the best asset. And Bitcoiners have been talking about this as well. You know, we are going to see more money printing. And while you think you might be getting richer in dollar terms because of your equity portfolio, your stock portfolio, you're really not. That increase in wealth and purchasing power isn't there at all. It's just the S&P tracking inflation. So we're looking at the money supply growing, and Bitcoin's the only alternative. And of course, as we're going to see here in a second, it has a lot more room to run. You know, with a very small percentage of the world using it, I think we're going to see more people rush into Bitcoin to escape this debasement trade.
Yeah. As a reminder to anyone listening, if you look at the last 20 years, the S&P and the broad money supply have basically increased at about the same rate within a few hundred basis points of one another. So the S&P 500 is keeping you from getting poor, but it's not making you wealthier, no matter what the numbers look like. Okay, so guys, Bitcoin now has a market cap of $2.5 trillion. We've obviously been pumping lately. But it's 23.8 trillion less than gold. So gold, Bitcoin is a lot smaller. Even if Bitcoin were to hit $1 million and gold was unchanged, Bitcoin would still only be 75% of the size of gold. The Covasi letter says we are still early. And I think we would probably all agree with that. But Greer, why don't you put that in perspective for people?
Yeah, there's so much money in the world that is going to be chasing the small amount of Bitcoin that's available and then even smaller amount that is left to be mined. So I think we are going to see the world get repriced in Bitcoin. It won't be how much money do you have, it'll be how many sats do you control. So as I said a second ago, like Bitcoin has room to run. The hardest thing about being an average pleb like me is that we don't like being early. It is difficult to be early. The hardest thing you have to do is just sit there and wait and slowly grow your stack over time. But I think coming to grips with that, like we are early, the world will catch on eventually. And if you're a holder in self-custody, you will be rewarded. And I think all of the work that you've done to orange pill people and help them see what Bitcoin's all about, they're going to get it pretty soon. You know, nothing attracts new buyers like greed, number go up. And I think as Bitcoin continues to pump in price, you're going to get those text messages and people are going to need help.
Yeah, I completely agree. And you made a comment there that I think is important to really highlight, and that is the number of sats that you control, which is very different than the number of sats you have sitting on an exchange that are merely an IOU. Adam, you want to add anything to that?
I think this is a good example that paints the picture of really kind of how early we are on this journey to flip gold. And that's really kind of just step one, demonetizing gold. A lot of that, a lot of the monetization of gold, meaning people are buying gold for the purpose of storing their value rather than, you know, using it as jewelry or in electronics or something like that. That all is up for grabs. And Bitcoin is the path of least resistance for that. And I truly believe that there is going to be a major shift. Obviously, I think, you know, probably about 5 or so years ago when I started really looking at what I see is like the flipping of gold from into Bitcoin, I didn't see gold performing this well, you know, at this point. So I think it was a surprise to me, and maybe to some more people as well. I'm sure the gold bugs weren't surprised one bit, but nonetheless, gold has performed, you know, much better than my expectations would have been a few years ago. But I will say that that doesn't change anything. And one of the main reasons is I'm looking at this article that was posted just 6 days ago. It says 73% of young investors choose Bitcoin over gold. And this was a survey that was recently conducted. So one thing you got to understand is gold is old. You know, these new kids on the block, they don't care about gold. They want Bitcoin. They understand, they can see the signal. They don't want a shiny rock. They can't do anything with it. With Bitcoin, you can audit it. The entire planet can audit it every 10 minutes, right? With gold, we don't really know anything about where it is. We don't know anything about, the security model behind it. We can guess, and we can listen to what they tell us on the news and what our governments tell us. But when it really comes down to it, we're just trusting them that they're telling us the truth. With Bitcoin, we don't need to trust anybody. It's completely trustless. And that is, I think, one of the biggest advantages to make sure that you know that there is a finite supply and that you know for sure that, you know, that's not being manipulated, which is, I think, ultimately the biggest failure of gold is the manipulation over the years. So, yeah.
I think you're spot on. And we've seen a lot of sovereigns buying gold. And I think there are two reasons for that. One is sort of the debasement trade that we talked about. But I think the other reason is to the extent that they can influence the world in the direction of gold again, which is still something they can manipulate, the better for them. And so I think it's going to be a while before they concede to Bitcoin as the monetary gunpowder that it is, as Saifedean likes to put it. All right, guys, we've got from Matthew Siegel, hearing exchanges are out of Bitcoin. This is now a couple days old, but he said Monday 9:30 might be the first official shortage, not financial advice, just it might make sense to get some. Obviously, I agree with him that it might make sense to get some. I completely disagree that exchanges are out of Bitcoin because that's exactly what the pricing mechanism does. It means that exchanges will just buy at a higher price if they, quote unquote, run out of Bitcoin. I think we're a long ways away from exchanges not existing, and there really isn't a place you buy Bitcoin any longer. You just use it as money and trade for it and that. But Adam, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this.
Yeah, I was actually watching this pretty closely when Matthew was posting about this. Now, obviously, Matthew is with VanEck, the Bitcoin ETF, And so, you know, he's intimately familiar with the OTC desks and the liquidity available. So I think that when he says something like this, it should be taken seriously. With that said, I also saw some posts from, it was Mike Alfred, and he had mentioned that he was talking with somebody that worked with an OTC desk and was, you know, sharing this information. He didn't reveal who the person was. But based off of, you know, the limited information that I can see, I think he may have actually been talking about Matthew Siegel. So if that's the case, you know, he was relaying that information. But the important part to throwing that part into it is that he also, he being Mike Alfred, came up with a, came and had a follow-up post yesterday saying that the OTC desks have basically balanced. And so there were some massive inflows that we saw into exchanges that over the last, you know, 24 to 48 hours that I think really emphasized the dire need for liquidity at these OTC desks. So I do think that there was a little bit of a liquidity crunch. I don't know for sure if it's completely resolved at this point. But here's what really matters. And this is just the fact. Bitcoin is going to run out at every given price forever. You know, there's only going to be so many people willing to sell it for $125,000. And then they're going to be gone forever. And we may see that again someday in the future. But right now, you know, at some point, we're going to pass that period where people are selling Bitcoin for $125 that they can print an infinite amount of. And so it's just, you know, it's like at 100K, right? Nobody's selling Bitcoin for $100,000. And that may never happen again. So my point is, that's the signal, is just don't worry about, you know, liquidity crunches. Don't worry about the OTC desks. They're always going to run out. This isn't something that is new or novel or unique. Exchange volume is going down, which is a good thing to see. But just remember, Bitcoin is priced at the margin. So whatever Bitcoin is trading at, you know, on these OTC desks, on these exchanges, that's what we're seeing reflected in the price of Bitcoin. And that will only ever continue to go up in the long run.
In other words, the theme of our show continues to be stay humble, stack sats. Greer, do you have anything you want to add to this?
I think hearing exchanges are out of Bitcoin is like a Bigfoot sighting. You know, it would be fun to think about. I would love to see Bigfoot in the wild, but it's really hard to wrap your head around it. The fact that you mentioned Mike Alfred makes me wonder if he pulled one over on Matthew Siegel here, because, we've heard this before. I think that there's always going to be Bitcoin for sale. It's just going to be what price is it? What price is it being sold for? So I think, we all talk about how great a supply shock would be. And yeah, we'll get there. The price of Bitcoin will rise to where it's out of reach for most people. But I would argue that we're already there today. You know, there's 70% of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. I doubt any of those people are thinking, can I buy one Bitcoin today? So I think, yes, get some Bitcoin, but also keep in mind that this is going to be a journey for all of us. No matter where you are, it's going to take you time to get to where you want to be.
Well said. Alrighty, we've got some more bad news in the economy. U.S. layoffs are running at recession levels. This is according to Global Markets Investor. So U.S.-based employers have announced almost 947,000 job cuts year to date, the most since the 2020 crisis. Second largest total since the great financial crisis, and only 4 years of the last 36 have seen higher levels of layoffs. So not looking good. This is just a common theme as well that we've been talking about, like, the books are being cooked. Obviously, they're revising what seem optimistic in terms of numbers downward a few months later. Greer, what's your take?
I think it'd be totally reasonable to look back and say, we've been in a recession since 2023. I agree, the administration previous, and maybe not the current, but these numbers, you can't trust them. What you can trust is how people are spending, how they're acting, friends and neighbors. And it looks like we are going through a financial struggle with no end in sight. You know, we don't have the ability to manipulate the interest rates in a way that will help people. If they lower rates, it means inflation is going to be right there. Prices are going to continue to go up. So I think the answer here is if you're employed, do whatever you can to be the best at your role. You know, stay employed, stay solvent. If you've been let go, Now is the time to pick up your skills and develop agency. How do you provide value to the world around you? I think in order to survive, all of us are going to have to step outside of our comfort zones and use new technology to help us become better, faster, and drive more efficiency. That's not something we want to hear. We all want the easy way out. But this looks grim, and I don't see any end in sight. I think we're going to continue to see monetary debasement, the lack of purchasing power, and with very few, maybe only one escape hatch. I don't love to see charts like this, but I think it does call into question the narrative that the economy is strong, that people are happy, that prices are low, inflation is low. Look around. No, it isn't.
Adam, what do you think?
You know, this is kind of sad, and it's one of the more sinister parts of money debasement in general. I even hesitate to use the word money in that sense because, you know, real money isn't something that could easily be debased. But nonetheless, we're talking about monetary debasement and the ability to hit that money printer button. And the reason why it's so sad and sinister is because the numbers that they're able to show us, you know, are they hide the truth. And if you talk to people around you, or at least when I talk to people around me in my everyday life, you know, they could probably admit and acknowledge that there's something wrong. But it's not so wrong that it's waking them up, right? So some people see and hear you know, the truth, and they're able to kind of snap out of it. But for the most part, people are like, you know, my paycheck's going up, or my real estate portfolio is going up. Well, the number associated with the value in terms of dollars is going up for sure. But things are getting worse for these people, and they can't understand why. And it's because they don't understand the debasement of the money. That's why they can't put two and two together. And so again, that's why I say that it's so sinister, because if monetary debasement couldn't and didn't happen, it would be very quick and easy to recognize what the cause of these problems are. And so again, I'm a Debbie Downer on the subject, but I think that's really just what really bums me out about this whole thing is people not being able to see the truth because they're being manipulated by the central banks.
I think that's well said, man. Alrighty, so we've got Germany has now proposed raising the retirement age to 73 to prevent collapse of the pension system. And ask Grok about this. So the proposal extends Germany's prior shift from age 65 to 67 by 2031, but risks social unrest similar to France's 2023 protests. So I'm looking up right now the average lifespan in Germany, and I'm thinking it's probably in the 70s, maybe early 80s, something like that. And basically, you have to work till you die because they're broke. Adam, take this away.
Ever since I joined the labor force, you know, from a very young age, I never understood why there was a retirement age and why there was this, you know, pool of money that I could allocate to my, a retirement account, and I can't access it until I turn a certain age. That doesn't make any sense to me. Like, it's my own money, but the government says I can't have it until I'm old. That never made sense to me. And so when I heard about Bitcoin, that was one of the first, values to me that I found in Bitcoin is now I can contribute to my own retirement and I can play by my own rules. I don't need to listen to what the government says on when or how I can use it. And so I think that retirement ages are a scam. You know, not everybody lives to 73. Everybody has different, different lifespans. Everybody's got different health situations as they get older. And so having a set number for everybody just doesn't make sense. I think the best answer to this is just opt out and use Bitcoin instead.
So the average life expectancy at birth for the period 2022 to 2024 is 78.5 years for men and 83.2 for women. So basically, you get 5 years of retirement after working your whole life, and that's what I understand that the math doesn't work, But that's the problem of having the government meddle in anything. Everything that the government involves itself in, from healthcare to education, it all gets worse. And the same is true with retirement savings, trying to build wealth for yourself. I think if people just forget Bitcoin for even a minute, if people had just, you know, begun slowly accumulating their own wealth and saving, the people who chose not to would pay the price for not doing so. And then their children, the next generation, would learn, oh, I can't do that. And the people who were prudent with their finances would accumulate more wealth and get to benefit disproportionately because of that. Greer, age 73 retirement, man, they're manipulating things once again.
I guess they'll have a whole plethora of Walmart greeters. I mean, what do you do at this age? How do you provide value to society when you're 73? This is when you should be enjoying the fruits of your labor and spending time with your grandkids. So this is tough. Imagine if we do this in the U.S., you know, or if the unfunded liabilities like Social Security just go away, and they will for millennials and younger. You know, we've been paying into Social Security for, you know, 15, 20 years. That money is going to fund the boomers today. The music at some point is going to stop. You know, we're seeing all of these conflicting or converging signals. You know, it's too expensive to live. We're losing employment. The money printing is going crazy. Inflation is rampant. This all ends, I think, in a very disastrous way. I personally wish more people, you know, knew about Bitcoin and thought it was cool. But I don't see, like, how do we get out of this? You know, the government is completely incapable of solving these kinds of problems. And the problem is we gave them a responsibility to do it. If they fixed it, we would probably vote them all out of power. You know, we don't have the willpower to say, okay, I'll opt out of Social Security. No person is going to do that, especially not the boomers, I don't think. But they were, you know, they were promised this stuff that we can't afford. So, you know, where does it all stop? You know, I don't know, but it seems like we're getting closer and closer to some kind of tipping point.
Yeah.
Imagine being, sorry. Yeah.
No, go on.
I was just going to say, imagine being 73 and trying to compete with ChatGPT.
Yeah, no kidding. I was actually thinking, so last week was my daughter's birthday, and I ran out to get her donuts. I got there at 6 in the morning, right when they opened, and the gal helping, like the only woman in there was probably in her mid-60s, maybe late 60s. Like, she looked a bit older, and I happen to know that I knew the former owner of this place, and they get in at like 3:30 or 4 in the morning. Because they, you know, they make the donuts fresh every day. And so I know that woman had been there for two and a half hours, maybe. And I'm seeing more and more of that. People who should be enjoying retirement, you know, having some financial freedom. I mean, it's just, it's sad. Alrighty. So in an attempt to ignore the Constitution, Ohio has introduced a new bill that would allow utility companies, so monopolies in their own right, to automatically adjust customers' thermostats in order to reduce load on the power grid during, quote, periods of high demand. Adam, I think there might be a solution for this. Can you think of anything that we could do to help reduce strain on the grid?
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, I see where you're going with this. It's you know, using energy in a way that is securing the Bitcoin network, also known as mining. You know, this is a great way to supplement heat in the winter. It's what I do. I think that if you're using any form of electricity to heat your home, you should be using it with a miner. I mean, it just makes sense. The other thing that I'll mention on this, though, which I think is really important, is the government overreach and control. And the only way to fix that, guys, is with self-custody. Self-custody is the only option. It is the only solution, because otherwise, you know, the government can control everything else. You need to self-custody your own Bitcoin, and having Bitcoin on an exchange isn't going to do it for you. So opt out of the system, mine your own Bitcoin, self-custody that Bitcoin, and, you know, you don't have to worry about headlines like this.
Yeah, I obviously agree, especially with your latter point. Now, in order to make this clear for everyone, so we aren't leaping from, well, Bitcoin mining solves this. So just to be clear, utility companies don't have an economic justification to expand their infrastructure in many cases if they can already generally meet sort of these periods of maximum demand. what Bitcoin mining would allow a utility company to do is to know that they've got sort of this buyer of last resort of their energy, of the electricity, and to build infrastructure that otherwise might not make sense just to power homes or businesses or what have you. And so having this buyer of last resort, who can also, by the way, shut off in an instant, is an incredible tool that I think more and more utility companies are beginning to wake up to, but it's obviously a slow process. I talked to Harry Suttock about this on the podcast recently. That'll be out soon. So, again, I obviously agree with you 100% on the government overreach. This is ridiculous and appalling, unsurprising, though, unfortunately. But hopefully, over the coming 5-10 years, we see much more of the miners' influence in mitigating against these sorts of issues. Greer, what do you think?
What triggers me about this is that the news segment showed all these old-fashioned heating and cooling devices. But this is happening because people, they bought into the idea of smart meters, you know, the Internet of Things. I want a connected home. Unfortunately, when, you know, the power company puts a lot of pressure on you to upgrade to their smart meter, and then this is what happens. This is a system of control. Your red flag should be flying instantly when someone says, hey, we want to be able to get you onto the next thing. You know, the next thing we talk about a lot is digital ID. It'll be very convenient. You'll be able to store all your data, pay for things, open doors, whatever it is. But when you hand over control to someone else, believe that they're gonna use it, and maybe you won't like how they do it. So to me, you know, I think the mining solution is fantastic. Yes, if you need to heat up a room, buy some solo mining equipment, and maybe that'll make an impact if it gets really cold and they won't let you turn the heat up at your house in Columbus. But this is, again, huge overreach. You know, don't opt into things that will strip you of your freedom.
Yeah, beware of the latest things, whether it's smart thermostats, digital IDs, or Core version 30. Alrighty, up last, we've got Hong Kong is going to be installing surveillance cameras for AI facial recognition. So the Freedom Hub of Asia, the financial capital, is going to be doing something that China is also doing and has been doing for quite some time. Greer, I think you had a comment on this.
Yeah, I see more and more countries are adopting this. I think there are, it's ever increasing, and in places, you know, all over Europe, Africa, they're, and now Asia, they're incorporating facial ID. So, how do you get around this? You know, I don't have a great answer to that. You can move to a place where this technology won't be adopted. And if you can find out what that is, you know, drop a comment below. But I think what we're seeing is just the rise of AI. And we will be giving up our freedom to the technocrats. You know, it's very easy to police people when it's done by a computer algorithm. And, once you're in this system, you know, how do you get out? So, I think this is something we need to be aware of. It's coming, and it's somewhat ubiquitous.
Yeah. Adam, you have anything you want to say on that?
I have a little bit of a controversial opinion on this, and I know not everybody's going to agree. But I think really the best and most effective way to prevent or stave off something like this is political involvement. I think we need to be involved in our governments, especially our local ones, you know, supporting our representatives and senators, with Bitcoiners, right? And having those philosophies and ethos translated into the governments that basically rule over us. And I know this is a controversial opinion. I was watching Pierre Richard and Mark Moss in an interview. I think it was over this last week. They were at BTC in DC when they were doing it. But Pierre made a good point, and it's a saying. It is, if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. And he's referring to, you know, in DC when they're making policy, you know, if you're not in those conversations, if you're not part of that group, they're going to eat you. And so he is advocating for Bitcoiners to become involved, you know, on the state and federal levels, in this case, federal. And I think that this is, you know, that's a winning strategy. Now, long term, I think that, you know, Bitcoin is in some sense a poison pill for the way that the state operates. So it's a little bit of a Trojan horse. And I think that, we have to show up. We have to get the Trojan horse you know, in the gate, so to speak. And government, I think, is the way to do that. So again, I know that it's not a great permanent long-term solution with the way that things currently operate. And that's at least the position that I take. But temporarily speaking, the enemy of our enemy is our friend. And so I think in order to preserve our liberties as best as possible, we need to be the ones that are delivering that message from Capitol Hill. So I think that we just need to orange pill and, you know, educate our representatives and our senators. I think there are some that are doing a great job. And when I say some, I mean very few. But the more we can get in office, I think the better.
I think you could probably talk me into that at the state level. My general feeling toward at the federal level is that we should give them the biggest middle finger that we possibly can. I think I've been listening to, not to steer people away from Bitcoin Banter, I know you guys all love the show, but a great podcast from the 10th Amendment Center called Path to Liberty. And I think we need to understand our Constitution, like the rights that ought to be protected by the Constitution, which, by the way, are God-given, not government-given, when we approach these subjects, because they are delicate. And we have every right to civil disobedience based on the Constitution and based on the way that the designers of the Constitution frame certain things. And I think if we can go with a strong understanding of that to the state governments, I think we have a much better chance of actually making some headway. So I would just say, yes, I hear you, Adam. I think it's a delicate topic and people need to be prepared for a fight, because I don't trust, at the moment, I don't trust state governments any more than I trust the federal government. I just think that's it's closer to home, and that's where I would rather the power lie than obviously in Washington, D.C.
But I think the protection of constitutional rights is the only legitimate use for the federal government.
100%. And we have completely departed ways with that philosophy. All righty, guys. Thank you for joining. For everyone listening, thank you so much for tuning in. Do me a favor, go check out, I'm just going to give a quick shout out to Adam. So I was messaging with him last night. His Mana Wallet product has helped me solve a problem. This is not a formal endorsement from the Bitcoin Way, but I'm just telling you, as a Bitcoiner, it's an awesome tool, and he's constantly upgrading and making it better. So, Adam, tell people where they can find that.
Yeah, if you want a Bitcoin wallet that is self-custodial and just works, it's really easy to use for everybody. You can find us on X at Mana Bitcoin. We're also in the Google Play Store and the Apple App Store. And it's just it's a great self-sovereign wallet, in my opinion.
Amen. Greer, tell them where they can buy some gear to flip the middle finger to the powers that be. I've got my hat right here.
There you go. Looks good. Shopbirdflip.com. You can pay in Bitcoin or dollars for now.
Pay in Bitcoin. All righty, guys. Appreciate your time. Adam, thanks for coming on last minute, man. Really appreciate you.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Cheers.
Have a good day.
Good to see you.
Hey there. Thank you for tuning into Bitcoin Banter. Wanted to take a quick minute to remind you to head on over to thebitcoinway.com/podcast to schedule a free 30-minute consultation with a member of our team. It is critical that you take full control of your wealth, and we can equip you with the skills needed to take 100% self-custody of your Bitcoin. For our existing clients, we also offer our Bitcoin Bootcamp, where we will conduct quarterly calls with you to reinforce the training we've provided and fill any gaps in your knowledge. While you're at it, ask about our solo mining service, something we think everybody should be doing. We also help with addressing your personal and online cybersecurity, and we can even help you set up a privacy phone free of big tech and Big Brother surveillance. Don't underestimate the amount of tracking taking place in your browser and in the apps you use every day. And finally, whether you're ready to make a move to a freedom-loving paradise or want a backup in the event of a worst-case scenario, be sure to ask about our Plan B residency program. Being untethered from a single location is one of the best ways to ensure your self-sovereignty into the future. Again, you can schedule a free consultation at thebitcoinway.com/podcast. If you are enjoying the show, please do me a favor, subscribe to our channel wherever you listen, give us a 5-star review, and drop us a comment. We would really appreciate it, and it makes it easier for others to begin finding us as we preach the gospel of financial self-sovereignty and beyond. Thank you again for listening. Until next time, stay safe, stay sovereign, and remember, the yield on Bitcoin is freedom.